Welcome, everybody. It's time again for the next installment of Luxury Living, the only show that takes a look at the latest and greatest trends in housing, dining, fashion, and all the things available for those who can afford the very best. With your host, the host with the most, Scott Cross from SC Homes. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Paul. Thanks so much for the introduction. It's the host with the mostest, though.
The mostest?
Okay. Yeah, I'll take the mostest. I'm not a hostess, though. So thank you guys for joining Luxury Living, sponsored by SC Homes. We are on pretty much every other Tuesday at around noon to 1. So SC Homes. Builder.com. Today, we have a really cool guest. It's Rod Gontos, which I will spell in a little bit, with Rod Gontos and Associates out of Dana Point. Actually, I thought it was San Clemente. I apologize. So Dana Point, he does a lot of, well, he's an interior designer, doing a lot of commercial as well as residential space that I see online. But I think we're going to focus mostly on commercial probably today. So welcome, Rod. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate you being on today.
Excited to
have you.
Glad to be here, Scott. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. And if you go to his website, you'll see all kind of accreditations. And, you know, it looks like you were on HGTV. You were on another radio show I watched. Or I think it was HGTV, right?
So we got two TV stars here. You were on Extreme Home Makeover, and he was on HGTV.
I was on HGTV way back in the day. I think it was Designer's Challenge.
Oh, there you go. Oh, that's fun, yeah.
Back in the, you know, covered wagon days.
Covered wagon days. I'm surprised. You can see all the people outside the window just waiting to get our signatures, you know. From
you do.
From our
I can't believe it. Some famous celebrities today.
Paul, we need to lock that door.
Yeah, please. I can hear him banging. Well, welcome. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and, you know, how you got into the industry, and then we'll talk about some exciting projects you've done.
Sure. I didn't really set out to be an interior designer. My dad's a civil engineer. I grew up around job sites overseas, steel and concrete. I actually even joked about it this morning with somebody, that I grew up with the large Tonka toys, you know, with the dust and everything. And
I love Tonka toys. I still have some of mine, I think, from way back when, those big metal trucks.
Yeah, exactly. But I had the real Tonka ones. So I'm not saying mine were bigger, Paul, but, you know.
Yours are bigger. Okay.
Mine were bigger.
But, wow, the line has formed even larger now.
Got to get that word larger in there.
Yeah, right.
I grew up on construction sites overseas and was going to go be a civil engineer. And I think, looking back, had I gone down that path, I would have probably turned to architecture. Engineering would have been a little bit too dry for me, probably. Anyway, I did not. I went down the path of economics and went to do a master's degree in marketing at the Peter Drucker Center in Claremont at the age of 20. Ended up then working for a friend of my dad's who had come over and doing some development in La Habra, condo conversions, and ended up down in San Clemente because we were working on some projects there that were Sea Point Estates down there was taken off. So anyway, and my sister, who's younger than me, was going to go do her master's at UCI, so we ended up in San Clemente that way. Huh. 1991, I think it was, the real estate market kind of just took a dive. So I was kind of trying to stay out of trouble and seeing what to do with my summer, and I ended up going to Interior Designers Institute for a certificate class up the coast in off Bison in Newport Beach.
Sure.
Had no intention, again, to just, you know, continue for another degree. 3 years later, had another degree. And knew from the very beginning that I wanted to do kind of hospitality where it was a mix of commercial and residential. We also had worked on some yachts and stuff like that. That was kind of interesting for me, H&S Yachts down in Newport and Ardell's back in the day.
Yeah.
So now I've been doing this since 1994 as interior design. Started off with a couple of companies that are big names in hotel design. One of them is Orange County-based WAT&G, Wimberly Elson Tongan Goo, that are currently in the Spectrum. They used to be on the Back Bay off University. And then got a stint of about 3 years in Atlanta working for a company called Hirsch Bedner prior, and then came back and worked for WAT&G in California. And then went out on my own in 2003. And we've been kind of, really our focus has been taking the skill set or the level of sophisticated consultancy that we used to offer at the big boys, the Four Seasons, the Ritz-Carltons, the, you know, W's, and offer that to some of the smaller mom and pops because they still needed the same level of expertise where it was business-minded, it had operations part of it and all this stuff, as well as the aesthetic, obviously. And started off really with the spa industry because in 2003, a lot of the spa industry was going through a lot of growth. So day spas, medical spas, wellness centers that were mom and pop operated.
Sure.
And but they, you know, they were taking second mortgages on their house to basically do an expansion. So if their business model failed, it wasn't just, oh well, that's a project that didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, my house is at risk. So I pride myself on actually having a client that we worked with right there and then, the first one that ran a successful operation for 7 years, sold her business, paid off her second mortgage, retired, and the strength of the design that we did for her and how it was integrated with low costs on the operation side for her, like in-house laundry and stuff of that nature, led to her selling her business. That was the strength in which, for the reason which the business sold.
That's awesome.
So we tend, you know, we say it's all about experiences, including in this case, you know, how the experience was for that client for us.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's how I got into commercial.
That's amazing. So what would you say inspires you in the commercial world?
You really, you know, a lot of times when you have a lot of space and all the space in the world, you pretty much can do anything. That doesn't really take into consideration sometimes some particular economics, like, you know, lease size space, square footage cost, all these things. Which, what inspires me really, and it maybe is my left brain and right brain kind of coming together, is that we provide creative solutions that happen to manifest themselves into an environment, in a three-dimensional environment, be it needing to be brandable, you know, a market position in a defensible way so you can get a shelf life of 6 or 7 years out of it, whatever it is, whether it's retail, whether it's a spa, whether it's a office environment, whatever it is, that you basically have at your disposal a really well-honed product or service that you're providing through this environment. And what inspires me is that solution, that puzzle, kind of solving that problem. Like somebody comes in and has got an intention to do, like I was mentioning to you, we want to put together a restaurant that is French, Vietnamese, and California cuisine.
Yeah.
We don't want it to be like a typical faux restaurant. We want to roll it out into suburban, urban, hotel lobby areas, airport terminals, and we want to be able to roll out 10 of these things in about 10 years, sell the company.
Yeah.
And we want it to be chef-focused.
Chef-focused.
And you got to give us the name again. You told us offline here what the name of those restaurants. I thought it was such a cute name. This is a pho, not pho, but pho, a Vietnamese restaurant.
Right, and we didn't do any pho anything in this. Right. In fact, they pride themselves on everything being organic and no MSG. But the name of the restaurant is 9021 Pho.
What a kick. 9021 Pho. Yep. Come on.
And,
that's too cool.
And the first location was they went in and took over a pizzeria at the corner of Beverly and Santa Monica and Beverly Hills. So obviously we kept that location because of brand integrity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But we rolled out 5 restaurants in a period of 3 years.
Okay.
The first one was like a 3,000-square-foot restaurant and 1,500-square-foot patio in Glendale Galleria, right across from the brand, or the Americana, I should say, on I think it's Central there. And then we've rolled out multiples of them. And again, you know, the economies, the numbers are very important for that client. So the design had to be adjustable, had to be flexible, had to fit within whatever size location.
Because you said they might want to put it in an airport someday or blow it up into a big restaurant, either way.
Exactly. And we started off with a 3,000 square feet, Paul. So to take that and distill it down to something that was serviced off the counter and to still have a brand integrity that benefited, whether it's a franchise or corporate owned, from the strength of the brand and the identity,
sure,
you have to start off from the very beginning having factored those in. And we did. We were able to.
Scott brings in people every week who do the most exotic things. He had somebody that made living doors or living windows. They took trees and embedded them into glass and doors. I mean, just some crazy things. You're the first person ever come in and say, well, we really got to think about cost. And most people just come in, this is endless money, and it's just indulging fantasies here.
Well, you know what? I'd love to have those clients. but I'm joking, because I really actually feel that, you know, if we do our job right, first of all, our fingerprints are not over on something. It's not about an ego built for us.
Right.
Secondly, it's really, you know, custom tailoring that solution for that client because they deserve it. And it's not so much charging them up the gazoo for the fees, because we keep, you know, our fixed costs very lean so we can pass that on. Because we really want to be a resource for people that are don't necessarily have the ability to write whatever size check.
Right. I feel like you're actually gearing them up to be one of those clients that has a no limit budget, because what you're doing is you're finding a way to make these people money, which is what I've really interested in.
Yes, that's what I was trying to get at. It seems to be the difference between home design, where it's whatever you can imagine we can do, and commercial design where it has to pay, there's a bottom line, it has to make you money as well. And talk about, I know he's going to talk about some of the other projects at the montage and other things that he was talking about, where it's not just about creating a stellar design, it's about trying to maximize and use the space to make more money.
Oh, absolutely. And the irony in the sort of the comparison between commercial and residential, and I've had the, you know, maybe the benefit of sitting at it from a hospitality, which is sort of a mix. If you think about it, a lot of people go on vacation, go to these very high-end properties that are hotel properties, resort properties, and come back, and then they call somebody like Scott and says, you know, I want to do that for my master bath.
Yeah, I get that.
And the interesting thing is, the budgets were extremely tight when we were working on Ritz-Carlton's and Four Seasons and Hyatt's and all this stuff. We didn't have the open checkbook. Everything had to pencil out. In fact, in many cases, I've had one. I mentioned that I had done the design on the Laguna Cliffs Marriott Spa. I think it was early 2000s, and that project, it was a cute thing that happened. We presented the palette of what we wanted to put in there. They loved it, and they then turned around halfway through the process and said, you know, we looked at our breakdown budgets, and we realized that we know this is a spa, but we forgot to line item budget the towels and the bathrobes.
Oh, jeez.
So we're going to have to take away from that. I think it was so lean. It was like $110,000 or $120,000, $120 a square foot or something that we were going to build this thing with. And we're going to have to take away like $20 from each one of those $120. But we really like what you showed us, so we need to, you know.
Fit it, yeah.
Right. So again, the challenge there was that, you know, we're not going to use limestone, but we're going to use a really nice porcelain.
Sure.
You know, instead of wood planking, which we were going to do to evoke sort of a harbor element in, you know, with Dana Point, we ended up using a very high-end vinyl flooring planks that was 10 years, you know, manufacturer warrantied. As long as you install it correctly, anything happens to it, they come in and replace it. So, again, we were looking out for the best interests of the client, but we were challenged, and we found a solution, which really, you asked me what inspires me.
Right.
It's kind of maybe a twisted thing, but I kind of look forward to being challenged that way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think our creative minds.
So, can you redo
like
our studio for 10 cents a foot here? Can we?
10 cents a foot.
How many square feet do you have?
Not many.
and what's your time frame?
Yeah, right. Somebody told me a long time ago, everybody wants all three. They want it fast, they want it top quality, and they want it cheap.
Right.
And yet, you really only get two. But, so pick the two you want. You can have fast and cheap, but it's not going to be top quality or whatever.
Yeah. One lady that was a sort of a mentor when I first started in the hospitality industry as far as design used to say, sure, we can do anything. It's just time and money.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Right? You got more.
My clients ask me all the time, can I do this? Can I do this? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Whatever you want to
pay. More time, more money.
Yeah.
I will share this with you, Paul. It's sort of very much in the early stages. But I'm working with a gentleman. We're putting together a concept for a men's, I would call it wellness and grooming. And it's not a shaving, it's not an old-style barbershop, okay, but it's a retail concept. And what we're working with is, speaking of your studio, we're actually leaning more towards, you know, Zeppelin's playing and when I walk in, and this is sort of more of a recording studio, MTV vibe in there.
Oh.
That's, you know, kind of man's cave zone, kind of.
Yeah.
It's funny because that's why people react when they come in the studio. I mean, the studio is very small for those who are just trying to imagine. It's a couple hundred square feet. I mean, there's a lot of stuff crammed in here. And at first I thought, well, this is going to be bad. And then people come in, and guys especially go, this is so cool. You know, it is like a recording studio.
Yeah.
So, Greg, if you're listening, I think we might have to hire Paul as a visual consultant.
I think so. I like that.
That's kind of the stuff. You know, people come to you, and they a lot of times have sort of the beginning of an idea. And I found over the last 20 years of doing this that a lot of people know what they don't like when they see it.
Sure. That's interesting.
But having somebody tell you what they like, it's kind of hard. So, you know, what we do is nonlinear, and sometimes it's somewhat almost therapeutic and sort of consultancy and counseling. You know, I mean, you know this, Scott.
Yeah.
It comes with the territory.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is one of the wildest things that you've been asked to do?
One of the wildest things?
In terms of design or just his life here?
Nah, let's stick with design.
thanks, Scott. That was pretty close. Yeah, Paul doesn't ask the questions.
We keep him in a corner.
Yeah, that's right.
He is kind of in the corner. But it's a nice corner. I have to say it's a nice corner. A lot of good posters.
Yes.
But I would say that again, going back to 90210, we were kind of challenged in that we had interior spaces, and their whole concept was organic and wellness, right? Kind of that they were veering away from its high sodium broth that you can get in like Garden Grove or San Gabriel Valley and a place that you want to close your eyes, but I'll go get my food there. Maybe I'll just do pick out, right? So we went down a path of bright. In fact, the Glendale Galleria location was almost, we kept all the glass from where it was. The store used to be a Gap store, and it was like a fishbowl. Uh-huh. Encouraging people to look in, right?
Yeah.
And so the challenge was, how do we tie in with that organic by selling it in a split second versus I have to read a whole bunch of stuff on the menu to get it, right?
Yeah.
So we did a...
So you got to feel the organic rather than read how organic it
is. Right. And if you think, sort of marketing, which is again, sort of maybe that side of my brain, and advertising and stuff like that, we're all sort of television generation. You get on TV and you're given the synopsis of something or a teaser of something in a split second.
Yeah.
And that determines whether you're going to go actually delve into it deeper or not, right?
Yep.
And if it doesn't grab you there, you're going to walk off and you got flip channels.
Yep.
So it's the same thing here in a way. And so what we did is we actually put a set, I think it was like a 25 wide by like 9 foot tall green wall.
Oh, cool!
Right behind the hostess stand, and we actually didn't make it non-accessible to people. We wanted people to kind of walk by it on the way to the bathroom.
Yeah,
and purposely stuck things like I think it was like mint or rosemary to where you could brush against it. Okay,
that's cool.
And we can't officially, from a health department perspective, claim this.
Yeah,
but we said while other restaurants are claiming that they're farm to table, we're actually wall to table.
Right?
Wow. And that became a very much a signature piece that could be replicated, and it didn't have to be 25 feet tall or wide.
Go anywhere.
Like in the case of, if we were to do a counter concept, it would be very small.
Right.
And we had to get, we found a modular unit that was pretty much almost looked like crates, the plastic milk crates sitting on their side. And you just build a modular grid with this stuff, and then we had to do it in such a manner that the plants could be easily replaced when they start to deteriorate, because, again, it's a restaurant and you're selling healthy, and the last thing you want is a dead plant. And how many times have we gone into places like that, that have a half-alive thing on the table, but they're telling you all their food is fresh?
Yeah, exactly.
So it has to be, there has to be an integrity that carries through on a conscious and a subconscious level, whether it's retail, whether it's spa. Spas are very much like that. You have to do it. And a spa has public space in when you enter. It has semi-private space in the locker rooms and the corridors. And it has very private space where you're vulnerable. You're out of a robe, basically naked under a sheet.
Right.
So,
Which is the way we're all sitting here today.
We are. Thank you for the toga, by the way. I think I'll shamelessly not use it.
Just trying to paint a picture here.
Right? We could have stuck with the posters. But the thing about that is, the whole experience could be destroyed by somebody not managing, and I'm not pointing fingers on construction, but not managing the location of an air feed to where it's right above a massage table where I'm most naked under a thin sheet.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, all the ooh-la-la and the bang and all the money that was spent on those high-end imports from Italy and all stuff doesn't make a dang difference because guess what? I remember that I was cold when I was in the space, and I'm not going to recommend it to anybody else.
Yeah, exactly. That's so I feel like you're more of a – you're very – you're branding. You're not just a interior designer. You create brands. So
you're not just sort of. I get the same feeling. You're not just trying to bring somebody's vision to life visually. You're trying to make it make sense.
And it has to be all
money.
It has to be all sensory. It has to be all sensory, including the feeling that I have money in my pocket. That's a good sensory thing.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, why would you spend the money?
Take
your family on a cruise.
When you walked in, you gave us a couple examples. Give us the montage example. Here's a very successful resort in Southern California, one of the iconic resorts over there along the ocean, and yet they didn't use the space very well.
Well, to be fair,
the shops.
To be fair to them, again, like I mentioned, Paul, I think the thinking changes like in any industry, and hospitality is also one of them. And the thing about built environments is that they have a fixed character. Right. Once you execute them. So
you're stuck with it.
Unless you execute them with the mindset that you're going to want to have multi-purpose usability and adaptive, you know, re-engagement kind of with different things as the right. property kind of matures. Because sometimes you don't know what the people's reaction is going to be, what is going to be in demand until you actually are operating.
So give us the specifics here. That was a little vague. Give us the specifics.
Well, I'm trying to be vague. But, okay. So I guess what I'm saying is they went ahead and they executed a retail location, which is very successful at that property. Here we are many years after the property opened up to the public, and they're rethinking what to do with the space. Mm-hmm. And the space basically is a very nice-looking, high-end master suite closet, if you will. And it's retail.
Yeah.
And it generates a very, very healthy revenue, right, without being specific to what the numbers are. However, when we were brought in to possibly re-merchandise some of the stuff, like visually make it more appealing, mm-hmm. right? Maybe even consider what kind of mix of products would go in there now versus when, you know, what they've been doing. We realized that, yeah, you could do that. You know, you could put new stuff on the shelves. But looking
rearrange at the end caps or do other sorts of things to make it
just, you know,
the displays.
Right.
You
know. Realize that actually there was a lot of non-structural elements that were built into that original design. That if we were removed, we would remove them, we would gain an additional about 20% of merchandisable space.
That's a lot.
Blows my mind. That because of all this frou-frou that somebody built in there, it really wasn't using. Really? I mean, kind of it, you know, isn't it that? And that's my complaint with design so much. It's just an amateur here.
Well,
my
industry credibility would go south, Paul, if I use the word frou-frou. So I am glad you are here to do that
to
for me.
Say those words.
Right. But the thing about it is it's not so much, you know, trashing what's there. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of finding opportunities by maybe another set of eyes looking at it or something.
Sure.
And we haven't even talked aesthetics. We haven't even talked finishes, which, again, I would go lighter. There may be a possibility of engaging a couple of windows that were buried behind a wall to bring in some natural light into the space. You know, you could do all of that stuff sometimes, and it doesn't cost any more. It's not like you're paying more because this is aha.
Right.
It's just somebody who's looking at it from a different set of priorities.
Exactly, yeah.
And the perfect example that did actually open last month was we were called in. I'm stepping away from Montage because
this is the Beverly Hills.
Right, the Beverly Hills property for the Four Seasons. The Four Seasons Beverly Hills on Doheny, locally lovingly known as the Duchess of Doheny, or some people refer to it as the living room of Hollywood, actually. It's one of those properties that is very much, you know, people, they're sort of this sort of friendly competition and rivalry, which nominees are going to stay at what property, right?
Yeah.
So it's that
kind of a high-end
property.
Sure.
And what they had is they had a spa in there. They have a spa in there that's very liked, very, very popular. But it was built at a time when, because the spa industry was trying to find itself, didn't realize that a lot of money could be had from doing pedicures and manicures. So they didn't allocate space for pedicures and manicures. So what happened is now that they know that, they wanted to basically bring that in as more than just a bowl in a room somewhere. And so they
A bowl in a room somewhere.
A bowl in a room, you stick your feet in it, which is still very nice a way to do it, especially now.
I want to see that in the Four Seasons brochure. And for those of you who are looking for it, we have a bowl in a room.
have a bowl.
See, that's branding.
You know, there's some people that have concern about standing water and recirculating water now.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, a lot of people are leaning towards bowls. So what we did is we actually re-engaged what used to be a guest bedroom.
Yep.
And we went in there, and not knowing that the option of not finding a solution was on the table, we came up with a solution where we took one guest bedroom that was generating X and put in four pedicure stations, two manicure stations, and two waiting chairs that would basically generate 3 times to 10 times X.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Same footprint. And the additional thing we did, again, being considerate to the client's needs, is that they said, well, what if this doesn't work and we want to convert this back to a guest bedroom?
Mm-hmm.
So even though we moved the wall of the bathroom to enlarge the space a little bit, it's a typical guest bedroom. You walk in, there's a bathroom, a guest room. We kept the tub. And we built a storage cabinet above the tub so that if they were to go back, they could take the sink away from where it is today, put back the toilet using the same plumbing, add the plumbing back for where the sink is, take the cabinet off, the tub is already there, and basically re-engage the space as a room, replace the flooring, and Bob's your uncle. The thing, Bob's your uncle, That shows my age.
We'll quote that right there.
Boy, there's an old, that's an old English phrase here.
So that was, again, they were very happy. It was very well received. It added a consistent revenue stream. In that case, they could also rent the space for wedding parties, groups. There's an increase in kids actually going to spas, so they could do even birthday mm-hmm. parties in there. And it's got a magnificent view of Los Angeles. This was not us introducing this big new addition to the Four Seasons. It was repurposing a space for more money.
Right. And did they continue that with more now, or no? They're just leaving.
No,
it?
I don't think there's a need for
okay.
it. I think
okay.
if they do need to enlarge that, there's possibly an ability to add like one room adjacent to it
okay.
to make it a larger suite.
Sure.
But again, you know, things are never stagnant. It's property and space is a living environment.
Yeah, that's,
when it's commercial.
That's how you make money.
Even residential.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
every 7 years or so, it seems to be for us.
Well, somebody builds a house, and
right.
they're raising a family, and then all the kids are gone, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, especially these days, you got a sandwich generation where you're taking care of a surviving uh-huh. parent, and you got kids coming into the house. So in 2008, I went out and took sort of what we do for with handicap accessibility and ADA compliance for the commercial side, and I went and I got certified aging in place in 2008. To take that same sensitivity that we do where, you know, a Ritz-Carlton handicap room is not looking like a handicap in or a medical environment.
Sure.
And taking that and bringing it as a service possibility into a residential
uh-huh.
so that you can have environments that are non-medical looking
right.
or you can prep a house in sort of a preventive way so that that house can give you another 5 to 10 years of usage.
Uh-huh.
Right? And that marble that you imported and, you know, Scott put in for you for that master bath.
Right.
That doesn't get damaged because all of a sudden you're going to have to put grab bars. Because guess what? We spent another 50 cents and put some blocking in the wall
yep.
at the height it needed to be.
Yep.
So preventive
yeah.
building.
That sort of flexibility I don't often hear about in design. They don't think about that changing use or changing environment.
Yeah.
I think it's for now. It's what I want. It's what I love. It's what's hot. It's what's in. And I don't think people really think through those things. And yet you're saying if they had just put a little extra thought, maybe someday we're going to need some grab bars in here, then why don't we just put this in there now and we can do it cheaply, the blocks and some other things here.
Well, and if it's not for you, you've got you know, people turning 65 at a rate of about 10,000 a day.
Yeah, phenomenal. We do a lot of shows on the
baby
59
boomers.
Here. Yeah, I'm in that age range, and my 90-year-old aunt, we're trying to figure out what are we going to do with here? Is she going to move in with us? And then what do? Take a bedroom and turn it into a hospital room here type
mm-hmm.
of thing?
So you call me and I call Scott.
there you go.
We knock it out. There we go.
But honestly, right now, whatever solution you come up with, which is very impactful on family, right? And you're trying to do the right thing, but every solution, including putting them maybe in an assisted living or a, you know, independent living, whatever,
right.
all that money is going to come out of somebody's savings.
Yes.
There's nothing that covers that. So if you actually are going to spend that $35,000 on a remodel in a bathroom or, you know, $100,000 on a remodel in the kitchen, don't put in a counter that's 42 inches high. Put in one that's
right.
36. Grandma can hang out during Thanksgiving and actually prepare the food with the kids.
Yeah.
You know, this quality yes. of life is sort of protected. And you now have a project. I mean, you're in the business, Scott, so you know how few of these are sort of lined up like that.
Right.
But if somebody is in Villa Park wanting to sell an 8,000-square-foot house, move to Laguna Beach, and they're older, they're boomers, their kids are gone, but they're not going to slow down. They're scaling down, but they're not slowing down, right? If a house was already made for them to where they don't feel old because nobody's asking them to climb that stool to get on that higher counter.
Yeah.
They can still feel young and virile and whatever and hanging out at a counter that just happens to be 36 inches.
Right.
And it's a big, huge entertainment kitchen with, you know, a 4x8 counter,
yep.
you know, for laying out
yep.
food and buffets. Then that house is going to be appealing.
Do you see that, Scott, in the homes you're building, these really high-end spec homes or working on really high-end homes where they're thinking of 5 years, 10 years, everybody's shaking their head. Becky's shaking her head. Everybody's shaking their head here.
Yeah, the only thing, you know, Becky just mentioned as well, was the only thing we can think of is an elevator. You know, and I think that's more of a wow factor. People, I mean, they claim it so when they get older, they don't need, you know.
But
I think
wow
it's more of a wow factor,
yeah.
in my opinion. Yeah, no, they're all wanting, you know, the 42. They don't think, yeah.
Because the norm is, and he's exactly right, is that we've done a lot of shows in the network here about aging baby boomers. People are staying in their houses longer than they ever thought they would.
Yep.
They're having boomerang kids come back. I did myself.
Boomerang kids.
Who suddenly they left, and then they come back with maybe a baby in tow or some other people in tow. Or they graduate from law school, and they got $100,000 in debt, so they got to move in with you and
absolutely
all this stuff.
Correct.
And then at the other end, you've got, as you said, the sandwich generation, where because your aging parents and relatives are living much longer than they did previously, you've got to anticipate that in the 90s, either you're going to spend $7,000-$10,000 a month, or you're going to have them move in with you here.
Right, right.
Yeah, which talk about depleting savings when you need it the most, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. And that is about the average. It's about $7,000 to $10,000.
Well, it has to be bigger than elevator thinking. Okay, I mean, when we built the house for my parents up in San Clemente, you could put we didn't put an elevator.
Yeah,
but we allowed for a possibility of an elevator to be placed.
A shaft,
and the landing at the top of the elevator being wide enough that if somebody is in a wheelchair could be circulated. Plus, there was zero entry on the house. There was no transitional steps here and there, right? So a person technically could find independence and mobility throughout that environment, which when you get impacted like that, your house, which is currently your safe haven, you need even more demand on that house to support you.
Right. Every little threshold becomes a giant barrier.
And by the
everything.
Way, and by the way, it's not just seniors. I mean, we have accidents all the time where servers, basically kids, are impacted. So imagine returning vets that are in their 30s that basically you want to integrate back into society, and there's no housing for them that would allow them to have a quality of life and not feel like every day they are reminded by the fact that they've been impacted.
So and you can do it in a way where you're not noticing it.
It's all really preventive thinking. And, and it's funny you use the word change, Paul. And the thing about it is, I think part of it is it's a harder sell in California. You know, we don't take winter clothes out and put winter clothes in a closet.
Right.
We don't put
our patio furniture away for the winter.
Right. We don't salt driveways. We don't deal with change. So I think the way to really think about it is not so much that you're changing and getting older. The way to think about it is your home is your primary asset. If you can leverage your primary asset for a higher return for a longer period of time, why wouldn't you do that?
Right.
And basically possibly position it where, in from a resale perspective, it's in a unique market because it's already providing amenities to somebody who's looking to maybe purchase closer to the ocean, but is actually older.
But you're asking me to approach it like a business, like an investment here, and not just an impulse, and it's my house.
Sorry, you know, it's not the touchy-feely thing.
But I like that.
I think you're onto something. Let's come back. We got to run this commercial here quickly, and then we'll come back and talk more about this, because this is dramatically different than other designers we've had in here. So hang around, folks. We're going to come back and hear more of this interesting way to look at design, even home design, right after this.
Luxury Living is sponsored by SC Homes. SC Homes Incorporated builds high-end custom homes in the coastal communities of Southern California. Why should your next custom home be built by SC? Reputation and attention to the finest details. SC Homes is committed to building energy-efficient homes, minimizing the cost of living while providing the best quality living environments. Our craftsman listens to the client's wants and desires. No surprises or cost overruns. Your future is our future. We build quality homes with lasting value. For more insight and information on Orange County's premier custom home builders and remodeling specialists, visit www.schomesbuilder.com. Browse our image galleries to view our projects. Find ideas, inspiration, and a style that fits your sensibilities. SC Homes, count on us.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy 3 with triple points on airfare. Buy 2 with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over 1 million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is all on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit AXPGold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at AXPGold.com.
All right, Scott, what do you think? This is this a different, am I the only one here that thinks this is a different way of design, or is it just because he's coming from such a commercial background?
No, I love it. I think a lot of it has to do with the commercial background, but I do like a different perspective, and it's just something I don't hear very often. I should probably take into consideration. But one thing I think the biggest lesson I think everybody's learned, there's two new hashtags. You know, it's Boomerang Kid and Bob's Your Uncle. I just wanted to put that out there. So, you know, if anybody's on Twitter, go ahead and hashtag those used.
Yes, those are the things we want to pass on.
Those are the two most important things we got from today, or those two hashtags.
Or the sandwich generation, which is what we are.
Sandwich generation, that too. Right. No, in all seriousness, though, I have taken away, you know, thus far, the importance of my elders. So, just kidding.
I'll tell you what. Well, what strikes me is that you've got to be to build in flexibility and to think through change in your space. And restaurants and commercials have to do that because they don't want to tear down the hotel and start all over again just because life has changed. We were talking about Vegas. Vegas used to give away the gambling.
Right.
I mean, give away everything to get the gambling.
Right.
Now they're realizing, wait a minute, I can make money off of Caesar's shops and restaurants and other sorts of things here. So yet they can't tear the whole hotel down because it was built a different way. They have to reimagine it. And now I'm seeing the same thing. Maybe it's because we're of a different generation, but I'm seeing more and more of a pressure on us to stay in our home longer because I don't know that I can't afford to move up and sell it like I thought I was going to.
Sure.
And at the same time, I've got to find new ways to accommodate things I never anticipated for. Kids coming back, parents coming back, other sorts of things.
Yeah.
Or my changing habits. My changing lifestyle.
It's a realistic approach that I don't get to take.
Well, and the funny thing is, that statistic or that sort of sense that you just described, Paul, when I went, like I said, when I went and got my certified aging in place back in 2008, the data from AARP was that 82% of people wanted to stay in their home.
Wow.
Which makes perfect sense.
Wow.
Why would you want to, in the most vulnerable time of your life, move away from a familiar environment and neighbors that you know? It makes no sense.
But that's what the brochures are telling you, to move to Sun City, move to some other environment.
The 55
plus. Right. You're going to leave here and go somewhere else.
Okay, so you're a bona fide boomer.
Yes.
Okay.
Just turned 59.
Bona fide boomer. I think there's a website. Bonafideboomer.com.
Yes.
Paul will be launching that.
I'm the poster child.
Right. So bona fide boomer, and I'm a late boomer. I'm on that cusp of 1965. Okay? Mm-hmm. So the funny thing is, I don't know about you, but I probably don't ever want to, at that point in my life, be living in an environment where everybody around me is my same age only. I'd probably want to not have crying children next door, but I would probably want to have a whole range of, you know, life happening around me.
Sure.
Because otherwise, you know, what am I in, like, God's waiting room, basically? You know, if that's the case, I'll move to Florida.
Seizure
right?
world, yeah, right here in Orange County.
Well, it's no longer Seizure World.
Right.
It is now Laguna Woods, right?
Exactly.
Right. There's the rebranding.
Exactly.
Right. Did you do that one too?
No, but I mean, it was really funny because those same realities have existed now almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just and then again, the end user profile, if you will, I don't mean to use the word "end" in a morbid way, but you know, the end user profile used to be a generation which basically was thankful to have whatever it is that they have in that stage of their life. What you have now are baby boomers. And the way I mean, no disrespect, Paul, but baby boomers pretty much are, I want it all, I want it now, and why don't I have it already?
Yes, exactly.
I thought that was my generation.
No, I can't say we, but, you know,
you can say we.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's, you know, because that generation, the baby boomers, if you think about every aspect of the life cycle of a baby boomer, you know, there was no such thing as disposable diapers. There was no such thing as milk formula. Those all got made because there were so many people that needed them.
Yes.
And that group of consumers, that large group of pocket of consumers, as they have traveled through their stages of life, have shaped every friggin' industry as they have gone through.
And have redefined every... We did a show on this a while ago, how the baby boomers have redefined they redefined what it was to be... Go out and find yourself. We weren't just going to immediately go into whatever our fathers did. You know, we were going to go search for ourselves. And then we redefined what families and this entertainment. We've redefined the way homes are. We got rid of living rooms and replaced them with giant great rooms and gathering rooms.
Right.
The kitchens have grown in importance. When my parents' generation, the World War II generation, nobody went in the kitchen.
Actually, nobody used the living room either because that was only for special occasions.
But it was important. That was the showcase. And now those have disappeared as we've changed, redefined the way homes are lived in. And somebody said a while ago, if you want to know what the next business to get into, figure out what the baby boomers are going to need in 10 years.
Well,
and they're going to need a different kind of house than they do right now.
Cemeteries?
No.
No, because they're...
Slap him.
There you go, slap him. But that's the other thing, too, is baby boomers aren't ready
to
basically
he can't even picture himself getting old here. Look at over here. How old are you?
35.
You're in your 30s.
35.
We can Photoshop that, Paul.
We can show them.
We can show them. I'm sure there's an app. Maybe we can download it while we're on there.
It's called Oldify. My kid uses
Oldify.
It.
When I was 35, I felt the same way. Oh, my God. It's so far off.
So far. It's like double my lifespan right now.
Okay.
You know?
So I just turned 50 last week.
Okay.
Okay. The first thing I did is I joined AARP. When everybody else is running in the opposite direction, right?
For you?
Well, because why not? It's you know, I want the discounts, dang it, you know.
But so I'm almost 60. I'm another 10 years older than you.
So are the discounts okay? Are they good, Paul?
They're good.
They're good, okay. But he's blushing in the corner. But, you know, I'll tell you, Scott, I don't think, you know, Paul's generation, even my, we're not ready to just kind of park
ready
it.
To roll over. No, we're not ready to die yet. Right? So we're going to redefine what it means to be old age. We're going to be more active.
Yeah.
We're going to be hopefully healthier and live longer.
Yeah.
And we're going to demand different sorts of places to live in, different sorts of communities. It's not just, it isn't going to be just what our parents did.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you've got terms like encore careers that comes up.
Yes,
you know, you add to the complexity of the baby boomer generation the fact that, you know, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, half of them are divorced.
Right.
So, you know, the fact that the cruise industry recently has had to reimagine their pricing packages to where they can't do double occupancy anymore, you know, half of the people that are divorced, you know, maybe they don't want to be in a little style, you know, Balboa style bungalow kind of retirement community. Maybe they want to be on the fifth store of a high-rise building off Jamboree that has a wellness center that doubles up as a fitness club that has medical capabilities for everything from panels to low testosterone to, you know, melanoma
testing. And different communities. I may not want to live in a suburban tract anymore where I have to walk to see my neighbor 2 miles down or something.
Exactly.
Maybe there's like Tinder for 50-plus. Tinder? So you guys don't know what Tinder is?
I don't even know what Tinder is.
What is Tinder?
My goodness.
Well, you guys could Google it. And Google is a search engine on the World Wide Web.
What did he say?
Boo.
What did he say?
It's a interesting dating thing. It's a whole other show, X-rated show.
Yes. Back in the day, Scott, you know, Tinder used to be what you put in the fireplace.
Right. This is a little different than that.
Wow. But that's when we shoveled snow in California too, right?
Yeah, right. So. Yeah. Oh, this is too funny.
Well, I think what's interesting, I'm going to try to keep making this serious here. Scott's
I appreciate
that. Scott's trying to just bash the baby boomers here.
Yeah, right.
I'm telling you that the baby boomers are going to have already redefined every stage of their life, and there's every anticipation that they're going to redefine this last act of our life here, this third act, this whatever it is. We're going to work longer. We're going to be more active. We're going to demand different kinds of houses, different sorts of public transportation, different sorts of communities. We're not just going to disappear like my parents' generation did and go out to a, you know, Arizona or Sun City and sit there for 30 years and wait to and play golf.
I agree with that in seriousness.
My handicap, it doesn't, you know, no, it's too embarrassing. I don't want to do that. No, but it's think about all that expertise and experience, right? That used to be just shelved. I mean, again, another irrational thing.
Oh,
and people, when they have the most to contribute, are when you basically dismiss them.
Yeah.
You know, here's a generation that is not, that has never, in the course of baby boomers, have they ever allowed themselves to be dismissed. In fact, they have obnoxiously not allowed themselves to be dismissed.
Exactly.
And I mean that very lovingly, Paul. And with that, they're not going to be dismissed as older people. I mean, when I did that certification in 2008, it used to be called, like, seniors, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then, all of a sudden, we were not referring to them as seniors anymore. Now we're calling them active adults. Again, labeling, right?
Yeah.
Because you say
so
active.
So we went from old fart to senior to adult.
To active adult, I like that, though. It's true.
What's the average age when you sell homes to people? You're selling them in, up and down the coast here, these multi-million-dollar homes.
Yeah,
are they still in their 40s?
Probably early 50s.
Early 50s,
probably early 50s.
So are they at all, be interesting as you move forward, you know, if they are if they're anticipating staying this house for 20 years, or are they just going to make one more big grand thing and the kids are gone and they sell the house and they're gone?
I don't know. I'm in a very unique market, you know, where it's a second home or 10th home or, you know.
Right.
And I don't think they're thinking that way. You know, some of my clients do. Some of my end users do, I should say. My spec homes, you know, we build are, you know, mm-hmm. $7 to $10 million range. Those are usually the people that don't look at it as their final home. But the ones that I'm building for an end user, a custom home, yeah, you know, I do get that. That, hey, I'm going to be here a while. What would you recommend if I do here or there? You know.
Right.
So I could see it moving that direction.
So then, because I've never thought of this, but when my parents had a house, the family homestead or whatever, nobody built in flexibility into it. It was designed for a young family, and then you aged in it.
Right.
And you had to somehow alter it, but there wasn't much you could do to alter the basic structure. It was a two-story house, and suddenly you didn't want a two-story house anymore.
Right.
You know, so you were kind of stuck with it. But what he's saying, it sounds like, is that you can anticipate some of this stuff and build in some flexibility, just like they do in commercial properties. As a hotel ages, they got to update it.
And make it look as if there was nothing there. And that's what I like, because I think a lot of my clients are, you know, greatly concerned about what people perceive their home to be. And,
sure.
and if you're not showing the handicap rail and, you know.
Well, absolutely. No, and it wouldn't have to be. In fact, honestly, you can do a lot. In fact, it's cheaper. Okay, I'm just going to go out there and say that.
Sure.
If you're not going to build a 42-inch counter, you know this.
Yeah.
Okay, with cabinetry underneath it, if you actually made it 36, there's less material usage in the cabinet.
Yep.
So there are, you can make an argument, and I honestly just did this a couple of years ago with my sister. We had done it with my parents and back in 2000 when we built and designed the house, and they're in it, and I don't anticipate them to be anywhere. Now, you could put a guest bedroom downstairs rather than have grandma basically show up in the middle of the living room in a daybed, you know, all of a sudden. You can anticipate stuff like that, but you can also argue that bedroom downstairs is a good guest bedroom because guess what? Then the upstairs is left private for the family, and the guests can have their own independence by being downstairs. So you can argue that it's not about being old and having to be put in that hospital bed, right? And we did it for my sister where she remodeled the house. We took away, like you were saying, Paul, we took away that office, made it this big grand room. It was an existing house in San Clemente that was built in the 80s. And we turned it into this large entertaining zone built around the kitchen. The counter, there's a 4x8 counter at the top of a T, and then the leg of the T is another 4x8 granite. And it seats 8 people around it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Take the chairs away, and you can have a party of 200 going in and out of the backyard. Yep. They're all eating right off that buffet.
And I'll give you an example again. Maybe I'm just of this. I think this is silently happening to lots of baby boomers, and nobody's talking about it. That's why I'm bringing it out here. Okay, I have a daughter who's 22 who has a baby and a boyfriend, and so they're broke, so they have to move back in with us for a while here, okay?
Sure.
And so we've had to kind of, I never reimagined having a baby back in the house here again and what we have to do to baby-proof it and everything. At the same time, as I mentioned, my 90-year-old aunt is struggling to be on her own. So one of the thoughts that came to us is maybe we'd build a little kind of extension, extra room, guest cottage sort of in the little back area, even though it'd eat up a bunch of our little tiny backyard. And maybe the grandma kind of stays there for a while, and when when she leaves, then that becomes a playroom for the kid who's probably now 8, 9, 10 years of age. So we were kind of thinking, if we're going to do this, let's build it with two generations in mind, the current need and the next generation coming up.
And after the kid basically is bored with that and, you know, gets their first car and they're driving around, Paul be ready to move the radio station into the back of the house. It's a small, shorter commute for him.
Yeah, right. Seriously. So, I mean, that's I hadn't thought of it to this moment, but it's trying to anticipate future uses.
That's
with your
good.
House. Yeah. So there you go.
Well, I'm hoping we'll have better chairs than Scott. So nothing wrong with the chairs. I'm not knocking it.
That is funny. All right. Well, let me ask you a question I always ask toward the end. It's always a fun question. Kind of stumps people.
Stump the band. I'm dating myself again.
Stump, is that another hashtag?
That was the old Tonight Show. They used to have a stunt the band segment. Go ahead.
Okay.
The Tonight Show. I know there's another
thing. Is this Jimmy Fallon? Or is
is about three before
Ed
that.
Sullivan. I've heard this guy named like Jay Leno or something.
Yeah, even before that.
Ed Sullivan, I think.
Oh, wow. I'm just kidding. So the infamous question is, being the title of our show being Luxury Living, what would one luxury be that you just couldn't live without? So a luxury you couldn't live without.
Mm. Luxury that I can't live without.
Yeah.
This is insight.
That's interesting. No wonder
it's a good one, right?
It stumps people.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, personally, One luxury that I can't live without, and in part is because I can't let it go because it knows too many stories and God knows what else is under the upholstery, and I'll leave it at that, is my 1985 Alfa Romeo Spider I've had since 1985.
That's good. I like that one. I'm a huge car guy, so I
can't
like the
let
car
that
answer.
One go.
Yeah. And I'm hoping one day they finally actually bring back the dang dealership so I don't have to take my car down to
they're talking about it right now.
Chula Vista to get it repaired.
Yeah.
But that's I've had that car since 1985, and
that's awesome.
It's kind of silly, but the stories that car could tell if it actually could speak would be too embarrassing. So I have to keep it under lock and key in the garage.
That's right. Well, so we do have a few more minutes on the show. Let's go ahead and talk about those stories.
Ah, no.
I'm just kidding.
Well, there was this one time in Arizona. Paul, were
down
you there?
Mexico.
I thought maybe it was Paul. No, yeah. I can't remember. It's a fuzzy thing.
It's a fuzzy thing. That's too funny. All right. Well, I.
If it's fuzzy, it was me. That's all right.
If it's fuzzy.
Hey now,
goodness.
He's bragging.
A whole new direction.
He's taking last minute to brag on the show.
Are there any current projects you want to touch upon before we have to head out?
Before we get cut off,
we're cut off by here.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I think it's going to be exciting to do this men's kind of grooming wellness concept.
Yeah.
That I'm working on. There's a potential.
Where was that at again? I'm so sorry.
We're looking for a location probably in Los Angeles or Glendale, Pasadena area.
Okay.
And one probably here on the coast somewhere.
Okay.
We're going to try to roll out two at the same time.
We've had so many people on different shows. Now, this is a generational thing. If you could see me, folks, I look like a grizzled old engineer here. I have jeans and stuff. I never dress up. And we've had so many people, Scotch generation, the 30s, come in here, and they're suddenly grooming. Men's grooming is cool and back in fashion. It isn't just sort of a GQ kind of thing. We've had so many people come on and talk about fashion again, and even men's fragrances or things. I just gag, and I can't imagine putting stuff on. Oh, come on. And
Okay, I'll share with you something. It's not a story, but relevant to this. Okay, one of the things we're looking into is actually, a lot of people do the food and wine pairing and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things we're actually looking into is providing sort of a body chemistry pairing with cologne.
Oh, that's interesting, because colognes do take shape on differently on each pair.
I have to go dig for a bottle of Tuscany by Aramis now because it's not carried in a lot of the stores. But I will tell you, without going into any details, because I'm married and that would embarrass my wife, it is amazing how that particular fragrance actually reacts with my body chemistry to where the response to it. From the gentler of the species, if you will,
it changes.
Is always consistent, regardless of age. And so there's definitely something there that, again, it's a luxury product. It's male oriented. Mm-hmm. It used to be that if somebody called you Metro, you decked him. You don't anymore, right?
Yeah.
And it's time, and it's something where it's not a women targeted skin line that is introducing one or two items that are men focused.
Yeah.
It's actually looking at it purely as a men's product line.
And that's different. Because in my generation, no, we're the baby boomers, I think, are anti all that. Cologne is what my dad wore. I'm
he
never
had Old Spice,
do that.
Right?
Yeah, he had Old Spice, exactly. All right, well, we're going to have to wrap it up there, guys. Thanks so much. How do we get in touch with you, or how do people reach you if they want to know more about this interesting way of approaching design here?
Well, I'll spell it again. It's Rod Gantus and Associates, and the website is www.rodgantus.com, or you can always reach us through Facebook, same company name. We're also on Instagram, and we're starting to populate. I think we're on Pinterest as well. We're starting to populate House as well.
Oh, good, yeah.
So Rod Gantus, R-A-A-D.
But not to be seen on Tinder or whatever the other crazy thing was. I don't know what that is.
You'll Google it later. I know you will. You're Googling it now. I can tell.
I'm taking the fifth on that poll.
Yeah.
But it's R-A-A-D-G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S. And like I said, it's rodgantus.com. Any questions, any things that anybody wants to kind of explore further based on this conversation we've had today, which again, Scott and Paul, thank you so much, and Becky for inviting me. This has been a blast.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And again, Luxury Living, sponsored by SC Homes, SCHomesBuilder.com.
Okay, you've been listening to the only show that takes a look at all the luxury trends happening here in Southern California and elsewhere for those who can afford the very best. Brought to you by Orange County's only commercial-free radio station, octalkradio.net.